Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For one magical season, he electrified college football. He could do no wrong. Phenom running back Maurice Claret was the answer to the Ohio State Buckeyes' dreams in 2002, the year they finished the season 14-0, including a national championship game that even the most casual football fan stayed up to watch that night. And then what? What happened? The proverbial fall from grace into a life of crime and violence and eventually prison. Maurice Claret is a survivor, though, not just of his own behavior, but of his mental health problems. A few weeks ago, he shared some bits of his story at a press conference to promote the expansion of Medicaid in Ohio to leverage an option available through Obamacare. We've talked about that before. We'll get to that later, including an update on the process to get Medicaid expansion on the statewide ballot. But first, joining us in the studio today is Maurice Claret. Welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Glad for the invite.
You surprised a lot of people a few weeks ago when you turned up at the Statehouse press conference with the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Ohio and others. How did that come about?
It basically came about, I was down at the Ohio State Fair, and I had ran into Terry. And just through natural conversation, I'm not sure exactly specifically how it came up. He had told me what he had done, and I told him that I had a mental health issue. But it was something that I never wanted to address or bring publicly, basically because of stigma or how people may perceive you. You may not be invited. You may get categorized based upon ignorance from other people. It was just a natural conversation that came up. And, you know, once I went out to meet him and found out what it was all about and able to share more of my story with him and just how my mental health have had affected me in the past, you know what I mean? That was the connection, and that's how I ended up going down there.
Because you're talking about Terry Russell of
National Alliance on Mental Illness.
National Alliance on Mental Illness, Ohio, will be joining, who will be joining us in a few minutes. When you were at the top, Maurice, the night of the 2002 National Championship, did you already know then that something was wrong?
No. Everything is like, it's clear in retrospect. You know, you know you're detached, but you can't put a word with the feelings. You know, you understand there's so much going on, and you just feel out of tune with yourself. You know what I mean? I would never call it mental illness just because I've never heard of it before. Or the stigma behind mental illness is sort of, guys who, like, this is the wrong word, but they say, you know, they may be retarded, mentally retarded, something like that. That's the stigma you get from it. So you don't put those words with the behavior that you're feeling, you know what I mean? Just even getting more educated now, just to even educate more people about what mental illness is, just like depression and stress and anxiety is real, you know what I mean? And I can remember going through or being in those situations when I was at the height of my career and going through everything that some nights just restless, some nights you can't sleep, some situations just you can't comprehend, you know what I mean? The anxiety and the stress of just having so much pressure on you and not being able to feel like you're going to deliver or to operate in a fashion characteristically that you're not used to operating, it causes these feelings, you know what I mean? And like I tell everybody all the time, I can remember sitting up watching these those commercials, those like 2-3 in the morning commercials, if you're stressed, depressed, if you're restless, you know what I mean? And that's when it started to sink in, like I may have a problem like this, but still in denial because I didn't want to go to a doctor. I didn't have the means to go to a doctor to pay a psychiatrist $300-$500 to even treat it. But that was like just some of the initial things that started to.
And this is when you're like the number one football player in the country in college sports.
Yes.
And you didn't have the means to get help.
Probably the courage too.
The means and the courage.
It takes a lot. Just you're a football player. You're tough. Can't nobody stop you. Your ego is real big, you know. And to go to somebody and say, hey, I need some help, you may feel like you're letting them down or you may feel like they're going to question you from there forward, you know what I mean, because they may not understand it, you know what I mean, because even when I tell people, like even when you tell people now, the thought in the back of your head is, hey, what do they think of me now? Or how will I be perceived after I share this information with them? Will they look at me any different? Or what's the what is speaking to their subconscious about me and this thing like that? You know, but more people, like ever since I sat down to State House, you'll have people who just come to me and naturally say, hey, I have mental health problems, or they become more comfortable to share it. You know what I mean? And the more people who you share and they're just more comfortable with it, it allows them to create stages to get help. It allows you to engage with somebody who can help you. I give you a quick example. I just went to go speak last week in Bell Fountain. you know, and the fact that I mentioned when I was speaking to him that I had mental health problems, it was a girl who said, you know, she hated herself. She thought about committing suicide and she wanted to kill herself. But it was just all mental health issues. And they talk about how she came to her to OSU, to the psych ward, the whole nine. But being able to meet with her family after and just have a conversation about the different medications and how she feels and identifying behavior with them, it gave them a better understanding. So the next day, the little girl's father was texting me back and forth saying, you did a tremendous job just in helping her just feel comfortable and understanding what it is she's going through. But it was just all mental. It was like, these are serious issues. You know what I mean?
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Maurice Clarett, of course, the former OSU football star. We are talking about the issue that he's been talking about lately, which is mental health and how it relates to the proposed expansion for Medicaid in the state of Ohio. It would affect a lot of people with mental health problems in Ohio who currently are not able to get treatment. Maurice Clarett, how much do you connect your diagnosis of depression with the trouble that struck in 2003 when you were suspended for ethics violations and in 2004 when you tried to enter the NFL draft by way of court order? It's just, when you look back, are those other instances where you weren't thinking clearly as you are now?
The choices that I made, obviously I made, and I was conscious of them, you know what I mean? But the feelings and the behavior are... The elements of the circumstances were just heavy on me. And I think just with mental health help at that time, I think I could have been thinking a lot clearer. It's kind of the same situation when I see Johnny Manziel. And I don't know how much football you watch, but he's another young guy, and he's just kind of acting out of character, so to speak. But it just may be something going on in your brain where you're just not able to manage the situation appropriately. That was even my situation after I got suspended. The stress from being suspended, the stress from... just the stress and depression from losing everything. You know what I mean? Just even like people who go through financial crisis and they happen to lose their house, they lose their job, they lose everything, they lose some money. They may be going through the same thing or just maybe mentally in a wrong position. And I definitely believe that just my mental health wasn't in the right place, or it wasn't as healthy as it should have been during all those circumstances. No man or no woman gets up and consistently thinks of the things that I was thinking of in a healthy state of mind.
What were you thinking of?
You just depressed. You have a negative outlook on life. You have a negative outlook on people. You have paranoia. You have restless nights. And you're just not thinking straight. You know what I mean? Now that I'm in a healthy place, you get up, you're positive, you're energetic, you have a focus, you have drive, you have goals, you have the energy to go pursue these things. You just can think in a lot. You can think straight. You know what I mean? My thing in the past, it was just too much scattered thoughts. And, you know, just through medication and through help, it helps to slow your mind down and able to create a discipline or a regime to get your thoughts in order and be productive. You know what I mean? Just even myself, now I think about how crazy I was, and you can go online and see the pictures and you can hear the stories, and this stuff has been played publicly. But if you see me now, if you speak with me now, if we speak one-on-one, if you see just some of the productive things I'm doing throughout the community and just everybody I come in contact with, it encourages me to help other people because they have people who's dependent on them, be it kids, be it family members, be it the job, or just some people just in society, period. You know what I mean? Everybody has somebody that they're connected to, be it with kids, parents, or everything that depends on them in their mental health, you know what I mean? And it, you know, it's just vitally important. Just even me coming out to speak about it, I can recognize how somebody may be in a mental funk, you know what I mean? Or there's a guy at the gym, you know what I'm saying? And he's been in a rut for like 8 or 9 months, but I said, hey, brother, have you ever went to go get some help? You know what I mean? And it was just like a...
Well, I wanted to ask you, you were a kid.
Yeah.
Let's be frank. You were a kid. You were 19 years old.
Yes.
I was wondering... if anybody ever came to you, if any adult in your life at that time, I remember when they didn't let you or you couldn't go to that funeral and you were upset, and I could understand why a kid would be upset about that. Did any adult come to you and say, Maurice, is there something wrong? Well, is there something I can help you with? Do you need to talk to somebody?
Coach Trussell always tried to help, and my connection with Coach Trussell, he's like, you know, been a father figure to me. You know what I mean? So when I was heavily connected with him, as you can see, my behavior was consistent. So he was more like counselor, coach, father figure.
How did that start to change?
No, when I got suspended, I was disconnected from the team.
Gotcha.
You know, so the disconnection from him actually being able to talk to me, mentor me, and help me out consistently, or help me manage my thoughts, so to speak. You know, when the disconnection happened, that was a heavy role in just me being misguided. But I did try to get help. I mean, I did try to get help. The Denver Broncos, when I went to Denver, they tried to help me. But I can remember when the general manager had come to me and he said, hey, can you sit down with our psychiatrist? I think she can help you just figure your life out. But I was resistant to it just because I don't need any help. I can do everything on my own. It's kind of like the alcoholic or the drug addict who feels that they can just kick something themselves because they don't want the outside help. But you need some outside help outside of yourself who can just help you figure it out. And that's basically what it is, just somebody else or something else to help you figure it out and to live a productive life.
And so once you were disconnected from the team, there was no one at OSU, no one. That was it. You were cut off.
Well, when I got disconnected, I distanced myself. You know, with mental illness, one thing you want to do is you want to isolate yourself. But the isolation is kind of like counterproductive because it's depressing. You know what I mean? Once you're by yourself all the time and then you play the victim role and things of that nature. And that's what I was doing, just isolated by myself and all of my character or lack of me building myself up outside the classroom played a role. Poor mental health, poor education, everything. All those things began to surface and they became the reason why, you know, I went to prison eventually.
What do you mean by poor education?
Just not educated. I mean, just going to school because I had to, not because I wanted to, you know what I mean? So there was no real passion to pursue an education, you know what I mean? And I'm a huge believer right now in self-education. That's all I do is read. I'm like a walking encyclopedia.
You kind of turned to that when you were in prison.
Yeah, when I was in prison, yes. But, you know, I had no thrill to just even want to learn and grow. I didn't feel like anything that I was learning in school. School was the conduit to play football. You know what I mean? Okay, go to school, do your work to play football. It was never like, hey, I'm going to go to school to be something other than a football player. That wasn't my mindset at the time.
I don't know about your injury record as far as concussions go and that sort of thing. Are you concerned about the connection between those big hits in football and the, you know, what's just come to be with the NFL and their...
I don't know. You know, if anybody see me play, I always hit with my head. You know, I never worried about it. You know, I'm pretty sure there was times where I got hit and I probably had a concussion. But, you know, in football, in the era when I come up, you're supposed to be tough. And just from a medical standpoint, that's not the safest thing right now. You know what I mean? But, you know, be it a good thing or a bad thing, I don't have that many years of playing.
Are you still playing rugby?
The goal is for me to go out to the LA rugby team.
Okay.
But I'm on probation and the rugby team in LA doesn't pay. So it's hard for the judge and the probation officer to say, hey, let's send you out there. I make money going around speaking, motivating people and doing the things I do online with fitness. So the judge, he understands where I get my income from and I can show him everything. But he's saying you don't have a job in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? So the goal is to eventually get me off probation so I can just go by myself and live up under my own means. But this is just strictly a probation situation. If the judge say, hey, Maurice, you can go tomorrow to Los Angeles, I take off tomorrow, I'll go to Los Angeles. And, you know, play rugby.
But has this probation situation been good for you?
Initially, when things weren't going
forcing
on, I guess, yes, somebody to hold you accountable for your behavior. Like, I understand it and I get it. And it did help out because it's somebody who's in your corner, not in your corner, but somebody who's monitoring your behavior during your immediate transition. But once I kind of got up and rolling and I started to travel more, or, you know, somebody may want you to speak in California, somebody wants you to speak in South Dakota, Texas, South Carolina, those things become a problem because I can't make an agreement to say, hey, I can jump on a plane and go speak. I have to go downtown to get a permission slip, basically.
Right.
And, you know, those things stop you and you understand how business works. Business is time. If you can't execute, it's...
Right. When did you finally reach out for help? When did you get the diagnosis and what is it?
When I went to prison, there was an initial psychiatric evaluation. We went through it for like over a 45-day period, and that's when the initial thing started. And then from there, they had basically depression and stress, you know what I mean? And when they initially went through it there, they tried me out on the first medication that had me sleep for a while, and I didn't like to feel sluggish and always sleeping and things of that nature. And then it was the medication I began on now is, you know, it just keeps me productive, and I've been on it for probably, what is this now, for 7 years? So 7 years that's how I've been productive. If anybody's tracked me through prison, through my writings, through everything, and just seeing me grow, it started in prison. I was able to just be productive, become healthy again, and just, you know, just move forward.
We're talking with Maurice Clarett, former OSU football star. We will continue our conversation and bring in Terry Russell of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Ohio when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Medicaid expansion in Ohio. So far, it's stymied by Republicans in the Ohio General Assembly. Coming up later, we'll get to the latest on the politics and also the plan to get the expansion on the statewide ballot next year. A big push for the expansion has been coming from the mental health care community. Despite a report released early in the year by the National Alliance for Mental Illness of Ohio, found that one in four Ohioans who would gain the coverage under the expansion suffer from mental illness. Coming from that position, still with us, is probably the biggest celebrity in the Buckeye Nation, bigger than the governor, to support the expansion of Medicaid in Ohio, former OSU star running back Maurice Claret. Also joining us is Terry Russell, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Ohio. Welcome back to the show, Terry.
Glad to be back.
You know, Maurice Claret, I read a Yahoo Sports profile of you from just last April, Okay. And it was a nice read. It was an interesting story, but it didn't mention anything about mental health problems. Is that just because you didn't think to talk about it with that reporter?
Well, I tell you what, this is the interesting thing. I had an article in the Sports Illustrated that I did in the rugby thing of where they are now. Mm-hmm. And I had a relationship with the guy that was like, he was like a very thought-provoking type of reporter. And so initially I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in talking about my mental illness, but he didn't believe that was the stage. He said, hey, let's go ahead and talk about what you're doing now because that's its own topic. And that's a topic that you should just isolate and not try to get lost in the shuffle of things, you know what I mean? So I wanted to talk about it then, and I actually believe that from the conversations that we had, like if I had to talk to about somebody publicly, extensively, and just try to bring out everything that could possibly help another person, I would go with Michael McKnight, because he did a great job of understanding where I was coming from, and people in his family had the mental illness, and he had some himself, but he just was like, yo, that's just a huge step to go in that arena because it affects so many people nationally. So I did have the thought to do it, but the form wasn't correct.
Okay. So, Terry, you ran into Maurice Claret at the state fair.
Yes.
And did you expect to come up with a spokesperson like this that day?
Oh, no. Matter of fact, I went over to shake his hand because I've been a Buckeye fan, haven't missed a game for years and years and years.
The same old reason everybody does.
Right. Just to say he was the best I've ever seen. And then when I told him what I did, he said, you know, up till 6 years ago, he was in such denial. And when he got treatment, it changed his life. And we need to hear more stories. How courageous what he just talked about. I hope your listeners understand that untreated mental illness creates havoc. But with treatment, people recover and become productive citizens. And I'm so excited that he is willing to come forward and talk to us. When we look at Medicaid expansion, it's really for those working poor. It's not, you know, people who are very sick are already on Medicaid. It's for those people, the waitress, as the governor said at a conference about 2 months ago, the waitress who's working minimum wage, who he gives an extra little bit tip because she lives pretty tough life with two kids or whatever. And when they go home, if she develops a mental illness, she's going to lose everything. She's going to lose her job. She's going to lose her kids. She's going to lose everything. And that's because she's not getting care. And what we want is for those working poor to have the care they needed so they don't lose their jobs, so they can be productive citizens. You can't make it very well with a mental illness if you don't.
And then it can get passed on generationally just by environmental reasons alone, if not genetic reasons. Maurice Claret, what about your growing up time? When you look back on that, did that kind of set the stage for this depression? Or I can understand when you talk about the pressure, just remind people you were 19 years old and how many people would send their 19-year-old kid out and face the kind of pressure you did every day.
I do say this in regards to growing up. In inner city circumstances, coming up in poverty, coming up in just the violence and the craziness, I think it does something to you psychologically that you don't understand at the moment. It's no different than guys going over to the Middle East or wherever they go to war, and they experience so much confusion or so many extreme circumstances. But when you're a young kid growing up and when you see guys die, when you're 8, 9, and 10 years old, when violence is normal, when your house is getting shot up, when fighting with people is normal, when this is normal behavior and this is all you know, that creates does something in your mind. You know, for me, sports was an outlet, but this probably set the stage. And I didn't realize that growing up that way was unhealthy until I came into a healthy environment. When you come to a real place like Columbus and it's an operating city and things of that nature, you start to realize the thinking that was placed upon you or the feelings that you had were just specifically based for that environment. And so there's stress even to learn how to operate responsibly, you know what I mean? And a lot of times people are resistant to it just through, you know, just normal resistance of not wanting to change, you know what I mean? I believe just even now, and I'm pretty sure if I sat down with a psychiatrist and they had like real studies and things that probably damage kids when they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old mentally, that it will play a role in their development for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, as far as youth go, Terry Russell, that's another aspect of this that we don't talk about it that much.
Absolutely. NAMI Ohio has been doing everything we can to expand our reach out to young families with children because it's an explosive problem out there for young children who have a mental illness and the bullying and the isolation. I always use a story when I got off school bus when I was about 13 years old. My brother was being hauled away because of a mental illness and how much bullying went on the school bus. I'll never forget that. It was tattooed. And that goes on in our schools constantly and in our societies. And the other thing that I really appreciate what Maurice has been talking about is we have a cultural issues too. There's a difference in a culture, the black community, and helping themselves and helping each other and the looking down upon sometimes going out for help. And we need to recognize that and do something about it and get these kids treated as early as possible. He had athletics, but what about that kid out there that's in this environment?
Absolutely.
That what in the future is going to happen to them? If we get them early, that's the other thing. Mental illness, you know, 50 years ago, we used to whisper cancer. Today, we almost whisper mental illness. And the fact is, we have a better recovery rate if the person is in treatment. All the terrible things that happen usually is untreated mental illness, certainly for Maurice, certainly for all the bad things we've seen.
And then there are the other cost ramifications of untreated mental illness. They often are untreated for other health problems, too, if they're untreated for their mental illness.
Absolutely. We die 25 years younger than the rest of the population. That's not because mental illness doesn't kill you. What kills you is all the health related issues that you have because of living out on the street or whatever the situation may be that you find yourself. So, the courage again to come forward and not blame his illness on all the problems, but to say it certainly had an impact on
Absolutely.
On what how I act. That's what I find so. Amazing with this story.
Maurice Clarett, your life has been, talk about tattooed. I mean, tattooed on the brains of a lot of people around in Central Ohio because of the way they followed you in sports and what they thought of you in sports. So you can look back on really specific times in your life. And
it's a good thing.
I wanted you to talk about that.
I was talking to Trestle the other day, and it randomly come up, and I said, you know, it's kind of cool to be able to go through what I've been through, right, to get through it, but to be able to identify with a broad range of people, you know, being in black communities, everybody from your poorest guy in the urban community to Warren Buffett, who I sat down, intellectually had a conversation with, and didn't feel any difference, you know what I mean? But just from the basis of understanding how to help people, I was driving over here, and I asked myself, I said, what is it that I do? And I said, I do a bunch of things, but in general, I just like to help people. And just being a helper based upon going through experiences that I know people don't want to go through. No one wants to be stressed out. No one wants to be confused. No one wants to live an unhealthy life. No one wants to grow up and not have goals. No one wants to not know how to pursue those goals, you know what I'm saying? And just through the process of just living, messing up, repairing myself, understanding what it takes to get through failures, understanding the character it takes, just being basically intellectual resource towards other people, you know what I mean? But it's fascinating, it's fun. When you're going through it, it's not fun. And that's the thing that I try to, when I connected with Terry, that's the thing that you want to promote, like, hey, if you can help them, because everybody may not have the strength to get through a problem. Everybody may not have a coach trust or to call on, or somebody to call on with more resources. And coming from the community I come from, and I tell you what, some of the work we're doing back home is like to help mental health issues, one. That's huge. You know, I just went down to Wright State University, and it's a doctor down there by the name of Dr. Fruth, and he's a very passionate guy, but his whole thing is about mental health issues and how, when you deal with them early, how the development is different. You know, they have extensive studies on, like, treating kids in preschool, first grade, second grade, kindergarten, all that stuff. They have things like, hey, if you educate them a certain way and if you deal with mental health issues and teach them how to behave themselves, but also instill the resources in them early, how they'll develop as responsible citizens, right? You got to figure the same things that people say they hate, the same crime they hate on TV, the same thing. These are people who have issues, right? And instead of criticizing them or using that energy to say, hey, we need a bigger police force, no, use those same resources that you feed into prison systems and things of that nature. Take that money to help people, help build them up, help them become more productive citizens. You know what I mean? The things that, like I said, the things that go untreated, the crime, it costs people money, taxes get higher. I'm pretty sure there's a financial or monetary responsibility that goes or correlates with that. You know what I mean? But if you want to increase the workforce, if you want to just increase healthier people, healthier communities, and stop the confusion from being on the news, help invest in people. And like you say, it's changing the culture.
And that would mean expansion of Medicaid at this point in Ohio for you, Terry Russell.
By the way, been in the business 42 years, and I think I lost my job today because I'm the spokesperson for mental illness in the state, and I think I just lost that job.
You're just like a bobblehead sitting next to him.
Right. But Medicaid expansion, you know, the issue, it's not a political issue. We've made it a political issue. You know, there's some that worry about what's happening in Washington, et cetera. But what I'm worried about is, I made a joke, but it's not a joke. As an Ohio State Buckeye, Michigan just passed Medicaid expansion, and $13 billion of Ohio's money will be transferred there if we don't, and they'll spend it if we don't have it. Wow. I can't stand that thought. but in addition,
that's a cheap shot.
I know, but I really do think that we are going to get this passed. The governor has been really courageous in standing up for the right thing. I just can't believe some of the communications. But our feelings are today that something's going to happen. And if it doesn't, we are going to have a referendum, and we'll come out, and this will happen next November. We'll get it passed. But we don't want to go that route.
Less
absolutely. And we don't want to go that way. And again, this is a human issue of caring for those who are unfortunate. You know, the governor said the other day, we can't have a thought that all poor people are lazy, that poor people don't want better things. They do. They just Absolutely. Don't have the tools. So let's get the tools. Let's get right. If everybody listening here, call your legislator up today and say, vote for a Medicaid expansion.
Do you feel like you go ahead, Maurice?
Well, I'd say I speak for them because I've come up in it and be around them. A lot of people want to help themselves. Like, all poor people aren't lazy. People Absolutely. Want to help themselves, but they just don't know where to start. They don't know who to ask. They just don't know. You know what I mean? It's that simple. I mean, it's that simple. They just don't know where to start. They don't know who to talk to. They don't even understand how to get a resource. If I was an athlete, the chances of me being in those situations would be very similar. You know what I mean? So I empathize with them. Like, I understand how you feel. But when a person feels they have nobody to depend on or nobody to talk to or nobody to help them figure it out, I understand how that may make them feel, you know what I mean? Or understand how they may be stuck in a situation or circumstances where they can't be productive. Until a person is physically healthy, mentally healthy, and able to help themselves, they're no good to society, you know what I mean? So the first thing is to actually be able to let them be of some assistance to themselves. And then that pours over to the family members or the friends and things of that nature, right? Like, if a person's not healthy in any fashion, especially mentally, they don't even want to get up and go out and be a part of the workforce, you know what I'm saying, to create some type of service, to get a revenue, to income, to go pay for the housing, rent, or mortgage, or whatever they may have, to go buy groceries, to stimulate the economy, all those things, you know what I mean? So it just, on so many levels, you can go from a government standpoint, if you can go from a religious and righteous standpoint, you know what I'm saying, just helping somebody become a better version of who they are is, you know, it's just life.
You're going and you're doing public speaking.
Yeah.
And you're talking about this along the way. Are you going to be going to lawmakers directly?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know what's in the future with it. Obviously, I don't get involved with anything I don't know more about. And that's the whole thing between him, just getting to know more about what's going on. Because you never want to be caught into a circumstance where somebody's trying to make a fool or a clown of you. You know what I mean? So I speak towards my testimony. I speak towards my story and things that I know. And when it comes to the specifics of that, Terry can kind of lay his hat on that. And once I find out more information, I can speak directly or how it ties into me naturally. You know what I mean? Or just how I see society.
But Maurice is just one voice.
Yeah.
And although it's a big voice and everybody
you
knows
Maurice.
You
brought other people to that press conference. It wasn't all about Maurice, right?
We brought other people who tell their stories of how tragic this illness untreated is. So, again, for your listeners, call your legislature. Call your senators. Call your state representatives. Say, vote for this piece of legislation. It's for the first 4 years, the federal government pays 100% of this cost. $13 billion of health care will come in here, not just for mental health, for addiction, for physical health care issues. It'll bring the money in to treat these people.
And the people who oppose the expansion say, no, it's not the federal government. It's us that's paying it. And how do you respond to that?
My response to that is then talk to your congressman and fix the things in Washington you can fix. I have problems. I'm not a very liberal person, pretty conservative person. And I understand the problems in Washington. But we have a state here. That state government and mental illness is a local issue. You know, when a person at 2 o'clock in the morning, their son's upstairs doing something that they shouldn't be and they need help, they don't call Columbus, they don't call Washington, they call their local mental health system that may or may not be there because the state hasn't taken care of that population. So,
Maurice Clarett, some people, they'll listen to you talking today and they'll still say, he's just using it as an excuse. I know you've said that, that there are people out there that are still critical of your behavior and don't want to hear the story behind it.
I mean, it doesn't bother me. But I don't speak for them. I don't speak to prove somebody wrong. I speak for the people who need help. You know, you're going to have critics and everything. You're going to have people who may be resistant. You know what I mean? But it does, like, not that anybody says bothers me, and that's like a cool thing. I've learned that in prison. You know what I mean? You got some of the harshest and most critical words in there. You know what I mean? And I guess once you condition yourself over a period of time, you know what I mean? But I don't even have the time to hear. I'm so focused in doing what I'm doing. Like, I don't get up in the morning and plan to respond to criticism or plan to respond to idiots. You know what I mean? Because when somebody, if they say something trivial, it's to provoke a response. But I've learned, like, once you ignore idiots for a while, they just kind of die out. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, I got up to help people. You know what I mean? I came down here to help people, be a voice for them. And the mission is helping people. The mission is getting the word out. The mission is what it is. And everything else outside of that, I don't really care. It doesn't bother me.
I want to thank you for coming out here today. We really appreciate it. And also Terry Russell, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Ohio. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
And Maurice Clarett, thank you for joining us. Appreciate the time you spent with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to hear more about what's going on with the expansion or not of Medicaid in the state of Ohio. Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau will join us. So stay with us and learn more. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Medicaid expansion. It's the goose that could lay the golden egg for thousands of Ohioans who currently don't qualify for the low-income medical coverage. And the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare as the president calls it, has offered states a deal. In Ohio, if the state expands coverage to another 275,000 low-income Ohioans, the federal government would fund 100% of that coverage for the first 3 years and then eventually drop to 90%. That's worth about $13 billion over 7 years. But Republicans in the Ohio General Assembly have stymied efforts to enact the expansion, despite the top Republican in the state, Governor John Kasich, pushing hard for it. We were just joined by Maurice Clark, former OSU football star. He is pushing for it. Lots of other people are joining us now to talk about it and explain it more. It's Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome, as always, Karen.
Great to be here, Ann.
So what's the timeline on the Medicaid expansion in Ohio? When does the Ohio General Assembly and the governor have to act to enact a measure?
Well, that's a fluid question. The legislature is not expected to come back until October. And for a long time, we kept hearing that October 1st was the deadline, that we wanted to have things in place. That's when the Affordable Care Act starts taking people signing up for health insurance. And so the deadline that had been talked about for a long time was getting something done and in place by October 1st so we could capitalize on the $13 billion of federal funds over 7 years that you just mentioned. But now that's not going to happen, obviously. And even if it did, even if expansion were to happen immediately, which is not going to happen, most likely, there's still some questions about whether the state would be ready to fully capitalize on all that money starting on January 1st. The federal government pays 100% of Medicaid expansion costs for 3 years, starting on January 1st of 2014. So the longer the state waits to do expansion or to, you know, not even consider it, then that first 3 years of 100% reimbursement is out.
Yeah, it's not the first 3 years of when you start doing it. It's for the first 3 years starting
on January 1st of 2014, right. Exactly. So the legislature now is looking at, there's several different bills that would specifically deal with Medicaid. There's the one that's probably the most likely is a Medicaid reform bill. That's the one that House Speaker Batchelder has talked about, and he has said clearly that something needs to be done on Medicaid reform, and it's the top of the agenda when lawmakers come back next month. There's other bills out there, though. There is a bill from State Representative Barbara Sears, who I just interviewed yesterday for our TV show, The State of Ohio, about her bill. Her bill has no co-sponsors. She's the only Republican who's really been out there, other than Governor Kasich, talking about Medicaid expansion to 138% of the federal poverty level, which would bring at least 275,000 Ohioans into the system. She says right now she's hoping that it's a conversation starter, that the idea that there are no co-sponsors doesn't mean that there aren't Republicans who do like this idea in the legislature. We're not hearing from them, though.
What does her bill do?
Her bill would do pretty much what Governor Kasich's budget proposal would do.
Which was stripped from the budget.
Exactly. Yeah. But she says it also adds some other protections in there, some other reforms and some other things in there that the governor's original budget proposal did not do.
Are the Republicans who do oppose it and are stopping it from going anywhere, are they solely opposed to it because it's spending more federal money, or are there other issues associated with it? Do they not just not like Medicaid?
There's a lot of arguments, and that is one of them. There are folks in the legislature, and when you talk to think tanks and researchers and that sort of thing, you'll find on the conservative side, that is, that there's a fear that the Medicaid system is broken and that it's a failed system, that it's not producing the results that we want it to, especially if we're going to pour more money into it. But then Democrats and supporters of Medicaid expansion will say, well, the system's changed. There have been a lot of reforms. There are more reforms coming. It's not the same system that it was a couple of years ago.
Governor Kasich made that a big deal. Right off the bat, he did.
Right. And so that's just one of the arguments, though. You have other arguments that say this 275,000 number of people who would be added to the Medicaid rolls if expansion happens, that number is maybe underestimated by hundreds of thousands, that there might be a lot more people that would come out. And you have some conservatives who are saying as many as 900,000 people. And so there's a real concern about how would the state pay for those folks after that 3 years where the federal government is not reimbursing 100%. How would the state make up those costs?
Make up the 10%.
And, you know, there are some questions, too, about you know, what would be the benefit of Medicaid expansion for people who are not currently on it? And I just interviewed for next week's TV show a John Allison, who's the head of the coalition that's pushing this Medicaid expansion for the ballot, alongside Robert Ault from the Buckeye Institute, which is a conservative think tank. And Robert Ault was saying, you know, that this system, there's some real concerns about the people who would be added to the rolls because they're not the elderly, the disabled, pregnant women, children. They're already covered. He claims it's mostly working poor, which is what we've heard, and people who he feels would be disincentivized, if that's a word, to work. And of course, the people.
As if the assumption being, if you work, then you're getting health care benefits.
The other side of that argument is this isn't intended to be a disincentive to work. This wouldn't be a disincentive to work. This is actually, and in fact, the coalition that's pushing this petition drive is called Healthy Ohioans Work. The idea being that people who are working poor many times don't have the money to buy health insurance. Health insurance is not offered by their employers. And so this would be a way to cover people who wouldn't have the opportunity to get health insurance otherwise.
Why couldn't they get it? What crack do they fall through that they would not qualify for it through Obamacare?
That I'm not certain about. I think this whole Medicaid expansion is intended to cover that crack.
Right.
And to try to bring those people in who normally wouldn't be in. They're not qualifying for Medicaid because they're childless or
But they can't even afford the costs of what their share of the costs of Obamacare.
And certainly there are folks who can't afford health insurance because they have pre-existing conditions and other issues that make them not be able to afford the plans that are out there. So this is one of these issues. John Allison, the head of the Healthy Ohioans Work Coalition, he was the chief of staff for Governor Bob Taft. He's been around politics for a long time. And he says this is the most complicated issue that he's worked on. And it's not just complicated from the Medicaid part, which is the biggest part of the state budget, and people still don't understand it. But there's also the other half of it, the political half, the half that's the warring parties behind the scenes and the strange coalition of Democrats and social service groups and hospitals and business groups and Governor Kasich aligned together, which is an unusual group right there. And then you've got certainly Barbara Sears and other Republicans who have talked favorably or at least considered Medicaid expansion, who now could face primary challenges from Tea Party activists who are very concerned about Medicaid expansion. So it's a really complicated issue, not only from the Medicaid part of it, but also the political part of it.
How big of a priority is this for the governor at this point? How much time he's spending on this?
I haven't, the governor doesn't necessarily qualify his time like that, but I know that every time that he speaks about this issue, every time he sends any of his administration, you know, Budget Director Tim Keene, Tax Commissioner Joe Testa, the Medicaid Director John McCarthy, any of these folks out to speak, that's always one of their top things that they say is that they're pushing this, they're working behind the scenes. They're contacting lawmakers. They're trying to break through and get some more votes behind it. They know if it came to the legislature, they've got the Democrats, but the Democrats are only 39 out of, 99 seats.
It's a Republican deal.
Absolutely.
Would the ballot issue do anything if it got on the ballot in, I guess, the present form? Would it do anything differently than what the governor has proposed in his budget in the first place?
Well, I asked John Allison about what it would take for him to go ahead with the ballot issue, because that's not really what the advocates want. They want expansion now. For a ballot issue to go onto the ballot next November, so November of 2014, Ohio would have already lost that first year of the 100% match. And so it really puts, in their view, Ohio behind in terms of capturing all those federal dollars that they want to. And so I think the advocates really want this to happen now and want to use this as kind of a push to lawmakers to get the expansion going now. I don't know whether that's going to happen. I know that Governor Kasich has been talking about an executive order. And I asked Barbara Sears about an executive order. She believes that an executive order could happen and could maybe work around the legislature in a way, because there's a lot of underspending in the Medicaid program right now. So some of that money could be used to help expansion. And also, if an executive order is used, then the state would go to the controlling board, which is a panel of lawmakers, and not
controlled
to the legislature.
By Republicans, though.
Yes, true. But it's a smaller panel. And that's certainly an idea that's out there if lawmakers don't come back and do anything on expansion right away. And, that's the real question is when they come back in early October, what is Medicaid reform going to look like?
I would have said, in my mind, I was thinking executive order, that's something a guy does when he's not running for reelection, but he is running for reelection.
He is running for reelection, yes.
That's a very risky
Potentially. There have been some polls that have shown a fair amount of support for Medicaid expansion. The Quinnipiac poll in June had it just about 48-47, just slightly tipping toward Medicaid expansion being a bad idea, but two previous polls had said it was a good idea. There was a poll that was also done in June called the Ohio Health Issues Poll. 63% of those responding to that said that they thought Medicaid expansion was a good idea. So, you know, there's some evidence that shows that people like the idea of Medicaid expansion. And it's certainly, you have to look at the other governors in, the other Republican governors in other states who have backed it. Chris Christie in New Jersey, Jan Brewer in Arizona, Rick Snyder in Michigan, who are not necessarily screaming liberals. And they've backed it. And you have to wonder, not only, you know, you can look at all the numbers and studies and that sort of thing, but they must feel that there's not a political risk that they're taking in doing that.
But in New Jersey, isn't it a more isn't the legislature is?
True. True. But certainly Chris Christie has held himself out and others have held him out as being a big potential leader in the Republican Party.
All right. So we don't know yet if it has a good chance or not.
No, we really don't. In fact, when I asked Barbara Sears about that, I said, what is going to be the form that it's going to take? Expansion, reform, what? And she said, pretty much flip a coin. So this is still, I think there's still a lot of discussion going on about this. Bill Batchelder had said earlier in the year, the House Speaker, that he has 60 members of his caucus, the Republicans who control the House, and they stripped it out of the budget because at that point in time, and I'm talking about March, I think it was, or maybe February, 20 members of his caucus, and this is his words, would rather shoot themselves than vote for this. I don't think it's at that point now, but there are certainly a fair number of Republicans who have deep concerns about this and are very are so concerned that they don't want to vote for it to go forward.
Are there concerns about their personal philosophical problems with the idea of expansion of Medicaid, or are there concerns the issue of having a more conservative, Tea Party-esque candidate running against them in a primary?
That's a real concern. It's a concern for Barbara Sears, who the Tea Party in the Toledo area, she's from Sylvania. The Tea Party up there is actively recruiting candidates. Tea Party activists have said that they would oppose anybody who votes for Medicaid expansion. They want to oppose Governor Kasich for supporting Medicaid expansion. But the other issue, too, is this philosophical idea of Medicaid expansion being, quote, Obamacare. And Governor Kasich said in the very beginning, this is not Obamacare. And yet ask Bill Batchelder about it, and he says, oh, he says that? Well, and then he laughs. So there are still folks that believe that this is just a form of Obamacare, and that's why they will oppose it. But then there are those who say it's not Obamacare, even though it is part of the Affordable Care Act.
It is part of the Affordable Care Act, which is Obamacare. What if the legislative response is a glass half full? Expansion, but with cutbacks. Do you think there's room for compromise?
Absolutely. And I think that's, you're going to see some sort of compromise. I mean, like I said, Batchelder and others have said that reform is definitely top of the agenda, that some things have to be done. And so folded into that, there's some ideas for some reforms that are really very technical. But the whole goal is to streamline the system and make the system more efficient. And the thing that I keep hearing from lawmakers, we want to streamline the system and make it more efficient before we bring more people into it. And, you know, it's interesting to note that the legislature did pass the budget with a prohibition on expanding Medicaid. And then Governor Kasich line item vetoed that out. So it is possible to expand Medicaid in Ohio at some point. It's not prohibited by any sort of language because that was stricken.
All right. So if they do a glass half full thing, is that going to meet the muster of Obamacare?
I can't answer that question. I'm not sure, but it's certainly, I don't think, going to meet the muster of the folks who are looking at the ballot issue and are potentially going to bring this forward. So, you know, we could face this as voters at some point next year, in November of next year, if indeed the legislature doesn't go ahead and just enact it.
All right. Well, make it a very interesting election year, 2014.
Absolutely. 2014 is going to be an interesting election year no matter what happens.
It is.
I mean, we've got, now that we've got, well, Governor Kasich hasn't announced yet, but we've got five Democrats who have announced that they're running for the five executive offices. So it's going to be a great year.
Thanks for joining us today, Karen Kassler.
Not at all. It was great to be here. Thanks.
Karen Kassler, she's Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, India. Once a roaring Asian tiger hits a wall of corruption and poverty. What's the way forward now for India and other emerging economies? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station. And thanks for joining us. Hour two of All Sides discussing Columbus's South Side begins in just a moment. 69 degrees with showers in and around downtown Columbus. Showers and thunderstorms likely throughout most of the beginning of the day, and then partly sunny later this afternoon, a high near 80. There is a slight chance of rain for tonight and a low of 55. Cooler, a high of just 67 with some sunshine for Friday. Support comes from TEDx Columbus. 24 speakers and performers will take the stage to share ideas that are out there and worth spreading. The fifth annual TEDx Columbus event is Friday, October 11th at COSI. Tickets and details plus speaker and performer bios are online at TEDxColumbus.com. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming at WOSU.org. And thanks for joining us. It's 11 o'clock.
Last year, Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman made a promise to the South Side of Columbus, a neighborhood that once glowed with jobs and commerce, established around the ethnicities of the immigrants that populated the area. But things changed when the factory shuttered and the South Side took on a patina of neglect and defeat.
To bring this neighborhood back required much more than the city could provide. So we issued a call for new champions and new resources and a new vision.
Coming up, we'll talk about how the old South Side, or South End if you grew up there, is turning its assets from the past into a gateway to the future. Join us after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/AllSides.